Welcome to Crosstalk, the number one recovery podcast in the world, actually podcast in the universe. I don't know who's rating us, but I say it, so it's true, you know, for me. Okay, well, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you like, subscribe, comment, tell us your thoughts. If you're struggling, reach out to us. We want to help. That's the point of this, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in. And hey, Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Rainey. How are you? Thanks for having me over here.
Thank you for being on it. I'm really excited that you're here and sharing your story. So kind of what we do on Crosstalk is you share your story pretty much, and it's like experience, strength, and hope type of thing. So we start with the beginning, how bad it got, what happened, what did it look like, and kind of, you know, what happened, and then talk about recovery, you know? What did early recovery look like? What does recovery look like now? You know, how can we help somebody else? That's the point of the podcast. Like, we're just trying to help people see that, you know, you can recover too, kind of thing. So take it away. Tell me where you're from.
That was blind. I just came back from there.
Okay.
Within the last 24 hours. So we'll say Indiana.
The accent's fresh.
Well, is it? I always get accused of having an accent down here. And I'm like, no, it's all you people from New York that have the accent. Mm-hmm. To me, this sounds normal, but everyone says I'm from the South. I'm actually from like 300 miles from the Canadian border.
Okay.
Like so, way closer there.
So where are you from originally? Because I know you moved around a lot.
Yeah, so we'll say Indianapolis. But I was a military brat. And that led into a lot of stuff. But it's like I never went to the same school for 2 years in a row until I was in high school.
Holy wow.
Right. So, like, I was born in Germany. I'm a Cold War kid.
Okay.
Air Force brat. And we were in Texas.
Was it your dad or your mom in the military?
Believe it or not, both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I had a feeling. I don't know why. I was like, I think I'm going to ask which one. But I felt like it was both or your mom.
Mama wore combat boots.
Wow. That's
not for
awesome.
Very long, but she did. But yeah.
Good for her.
But yeah, my dad was the lifer.
Okay.
And so they met in the service. And then
Thank
I came
you
around.
For their service. Actually, today's Memorial Day.
It is.
So I appreciate their service because they're probably fought for our freedom.
They did. They did for a long time. So.
And I love my freedom.
You know, and that's one of those things when we start talking about gratitude, right?
Yeah, we were
that
saying.
It's so easy for us to sit here and just be like, this sucks and that sucks.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, look at our life.
Oh, we're so lucky. Know? And you know, because you've traveled around. I don't know if you've lived in other countries, but, you know, besides when you were younger, I've lived in other countries and I came back here because nothing's like America. And we may complain about, we have a lot of issues, right? Our government and all, our healthcare, so many issues. But we're so lucky and so blessed. And other countries have a lot of issues too. So just want to say thank you.
Well, right. And it's it's sort of terrible. Like we kind of won the lottery, right? I've been, and at the height of my addiction, the worst of my drinking, I ended up in Southeast Asia 3 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right?
So you've seen some
like
poverty.
Fleeing, right? And then going, sitting there going, oh my God, this is like everyday life, right? Coming back here that even, you know, it was a life like I've lived.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've fallen on my face multiple times.
Right.
I've had the ability to pick up, right? I've been able to pick back up, get my life together, which is, you know, it's
hard to do.
So I guess on Memorial Day, that's really something to think about it, right?
Yeah.
Like the opportunity that we do have, right? That the hope's not lost, that we can always pick up. I have an unbelievable life today.
I know. Okay, so tell me where it began, because you do live an unbelievable life, and I love that you're here to share it.
Yeah, so yes, we bounced around. So Indiana was kind of where I grew up, and, you know, there's all the family traumas, right? There was a pretty ugly divorce. I've got a little sister, she's 38.
Okay.
So she will always be 11 to me though, right?
Okay. Like, yeah, of course.
I do it now, right? She's got two nieces and I've got two nieces and a nephew.
And she's still your little baby
She's
sister.
My little sister, right?
Yeah.
She's raised 3 kids. She does well. She's got grad degrees. But to me, she's still 11, right? So she'll say something. I'll be like, it's that control issue though, right?
My brother does it to me.
Good.
I'm always his little sister.
Yep.
I'm like, God, I've grown up. Leave me alone. But no.
Yeah, but I kind of when that divorce was going on, during that time and all that bouncing around, it just felt, you know, it was kind of in conservative rural Indiana, you know, it was kind of the talk of the town a little bit.
How old were you?
14, 15 when this really got dialed up.
Okay.
And then it was kind of right when I got my license, and I had that freedom to kind of get away from it, that it amped up. Well, you know, I started hanging out with the kids. That we were just all experimenting, right?
Right.
But I
knew
from the
get-go.
So is that
when you first did your first either drink or drug?
Yes, that's when
I was 14, 15?
Yeah, 14, 15. Okay. We got busted the very first time. I was 15.
Wow.
Should have known right then. Should have known right then, yep, this isn't for you.
Well, me too. Uh-huh. I mean, I was taken out of school in a stretcher. I should have known then too.
In a stretcher? We didn't pull the stretcher out until like a year into my drinking. You really hit it hard there.
I didn't know. I just was given a vodka bottle and I drank. I was thirsty.
Yep.
You know, I drink water fast. I drink vodka fast. What can I say?
It was like that for me from the first drink. Same thing. Was given a bottle of Hot Damn, if anyone remembers that. It was like the cinnamon liquor stuff.
Is that Fireball stuff?
Well, yeah, it's like Fireball now, Fireball today. But like back then, it was legit, you know, it was called Hot Damn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was literally what it was called. That was on the thing. I don't think you can call it that anymore.
I didn't know that one, but anyway.
But it was from the get-go. You know, myself and a couple of my friends, but me, it's about me. Once I started, just I couldn't stop. I mean, 16, 17. That was all I wanted to do that night.
Right.
It didn't matter. You know, everyone else, it seemed everyone else somehow had it together or a little more reasonable. But to me, it was just automatically a competition.
Were you like blackout drunk?
Absolutely. From the get-go. There was no other reason to drink for me.
Right.
Right. That's what we were doing that night. Right. There was nothing to do. We're in the middle of Indiana. And like I said, it was almost competitive. You know, it was like, watch this. And some other guy can say, I can do this. And then so from there, I went to college. I went to an all-male school. Great school. Absolutely unbelievable school. A lot of history. Drinking. Very, very heavy drinking environment. Mm-hmm. Kegs were allowed on campus. And same thing. Took that same competitive atmosphere into that of watch what I can do.
Right.
You know? And so that just carried on with me. And I always knew that there was a problem. Because between the ears, things weren't going well.
And was that because, did you feel like you weren't hurt? Did you have a lot to say? Like, what do you think? I mean, I always say it doesn't matter. You know, our behavior is our behavior, and it doesn't matter. But, you know, were you upset by the divorce? Was that the catalyst for you? Or did it bother you that the town was talking? Like, was it something that really pushed it? Or was it just like you loved the effect of alcohol and you just went to the races?
I think that's right. It doesn't matter, right? Because to me, it's the same thing, right? It's the nature versus nurture argument. Am I a third generation alcoholic? Yeah. Am I likely a fourth or fifth or sixth generation alcoholic? Probably.
Right.
We just don't know the family records back that far.
Yeah.
But also all those things you just said.
Right.
Right. When I picked up, right, I always had this feeling that I was, you know, less than the other kids, right?
I get it.
Absolutely. And especially when the family started splitting up, I always felt like I didn't have as much as the next one, all right?
Mm-hmm.
My car wasn't as nice. Someone had a nicer car.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's taller than me. I'm a short guy. Most of the guys are taller than me, right? Mm-hmm. That guy's
a
little
bit
short. Anymore.
He's still
there. Anyway, okay. There's a better, you know, that guy's a better athlete. That guy's smart. You know, whatever the case may be, right? The idea, I always, in a good way, I thought, right? I was like, I always want to be the best.
Yeah.
I could not accept that you can't be the best at everything, right?
Mm.
And I really couldn't accept that I'm really not the best at probably anything.
And well, never I don't know be, about
right?
that.
So,
you're great at drinking.
I there were guys who were better than me at that. They somehow functioned the next day.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Well, we don't want to be the best at that anymore anyway.
Right. So that was, but I always chalked it up to this isn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even though I knew it was a problem, I chalked up this wasn't a problem. But like you said, the stuff, the divorce, because I would get really emotional. I mean, this is, you know, I'm supposedly this frat boy, tough guy, athlete. And I would just have these emotional, I mean, just like childish type tirades.
Right. Well,
and get hanging around out of nowhere. Right. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on with Kyle? Right. He's laughing and joking. And all of a sudden he's just a mess. Right. And that became my way to cope with everything. And once I got into the drugs, it was just nonstop.
Right.
It was my only way of really coping in my head with what was going on, right? Which was basically my inability to deal with just the facts of life.
Yeah.
So
did this go on? So you went to college, I assume, or maybe not?
I did. Okay. I did. I went to a pretty good school, a liberal arts all male school in the Midwest.
Oh wow! Got all male really school. Low. I'm shocked.
All male school. Yeah. All male environments have been kind of a common theme.
Okay.
Went through there. I got really lucky and I got an internship out in D.C. I got involved in politics.
Wow, I didn't know that about you.
During the first Iraq War stuff, yeah.
Were you what were you doing?
So I was actually working for a think tank. So I started out in sort of grassroots activism.
Okay.
Organizing college campuses, which was like the worst job in the world for an alcoholic at 23.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fresh out of school. I'm working for a nonprofit that's organizing groups on college campuses, and literally the phone call was basically, "Hey Kyle, they want some sort of political training. So go ahead and take the flight down there, take them out to dinner, buy the drinks, get
wow.
them signed up."
Okay.
So Got I just it. Was going around to college campuses for a couple of years.
Got it.
Getting college kids drunk on the company dime.
Right. Okay. Okay.
It's quite the life.
That's so interesting.
But I was still miserable, right? Like I was still miserable. Yeah. I went after that. I took a job. I was actually the executive director for a political party in Indiana.
Okay.
At 24, anxiety attack out the wazoo.
I'm sure.
I had no idea what I was doing.
I'm sure. I mean,
no idea what I was doing.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And then I went back out to D.C. to actually work for the think tank at that point.
I didn't imagine you a politics guy.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I think that's the biggest compliment I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
It is one of those things because I was a poli-sci and English major.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I did not know that.
That's pretty, I take that as a huge compliment.
Oh, good. I'm so happy.
The reason I take that as a compliment is because most people are like, oh my God, politics is going to come up and here's Kyle and whoa.
We'll talk real politics later,
no,
I guess.
No, we won't.
Okay.
No, we won't.
Okay. Even better. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to, right?
No, right?
Yeah.
We talked about control and stuff, right? Like, I totally believed in my ego.
Right.
I mean, it's bad. Like, hey, I want to go out and change the world.
I think that a lot of people who go into politics do have that attitude. And I don't know, actually, maybe I should ask you this. So do people go out with like good intentions and then realize that you can't change this system without money? And then in order to take and accept the money, you have to kind of be on that side of the spectrum. So you go to the spectrum that far down to get the money so you can make changes, but then the money runs out before you can make changes, so you need to accept more money. Is that kind of how it
you
works?
Hit it on the head.
I knew it.
You hit it on the head. I'll tell a story. I can say this. I don't want to name drop guys. But anyway, so there's a guy I'm out there, and he was, we called him staff asses, staff assistants, right?
Right.
On Capitol Hill. These guys got paid nothing. Not nothing, but they
right.
made, I mean, seriously, they were making, I'm going to get it wrong, but so this is in 2000 and, oh God, 4, 5, 6,
right.
7, right?
Mm-hmm.
18,000 a year?
Oh my God.
18,000, 22,000 a year as full-time congressional staff assistants, right? So, I mean, you're talking like trying to run a congressional office and interns and cost of living, like there's no way, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, and so a lot of the congressmen, the freshman congressmen, they all just get apartments together.
Oh God.
Right? 'Cause they don't have much money and they've got, you know, and I saw a lot of them come out seemingly for the right reasons, right? They got elected by their districts and they came out, and there was a particular congressman that I had, a very good friend who was a staff assistant for him.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy would call my friend, the staff assistant, drunk.
Right.
Need a ride. I do not want to end up in the news. I don't want to get DUI. Come pick me up. And he had like a 96 Grand Am. Like this thing was a beater car, right? This
yeah,
was, that
yeah.
was like an elected
and
official.
And he's picking up this amazing, amazing, you know.
No, this is the congressman's car.
Oh, the congressman's car.
This
oh,
is
wow.
the congressman's car. He's a
That's
freshman
so
congressman.
Funny.
But he's like out there for the right reasons. He's living with three other congressmen. Like, I'm going to save money. I'm not going to waste the time. You know, like all the good stuff.
All
right?
the good intentions.
Saying all the same stuff. Man of the people, servant of the people. And multiple times we went and hopped in his car and went and picked him up from the bar and dropped him back off in this like $2,000 beat up Grand Am.
Right. Wow.
And I was like, wow, look out there. Anyway, fast forward. He ends up the chairman of a very powerful committee.
Okay.
And there's
his
no
intentions
more,
aren't
no
that
more,
great.
Yeah, there's no more $2,000 grand dams for that. There's right. no more shared apartments. There's none of that, right? And so, yeah, that, to me, that was like the ultimate just like case in point of exactly what you just said.
Right.
Because that's what I went out there for. I went out there in the idea. But it was that idea that I know best.
Right.
Right. I know best. I'm smart.
Yeah.
If people would just listen to me and I get around other people that think like me, there's enough of us, we can just tell everyone what to do and everyone will be better off.
Right.
Irene, your life would be better if you just did it the way that I wanted you to do it.
Oh my God, same. And Kyle, your life would be so much better if you follow my rules.
Right. It'd just be that much easier.
Yeah.
Right? And I see so many, yeah, and I think not everyone, I can't speak for everyone.
Right.
Because one thing I've learned as I got older is that there are people that are wired in a way that I actually was. I'm naive. I never thought of myself as naive, but mm-hmm. I'm kind of naive too. I'm super naive.
Yeah.
That there were people
with certain things.
Yeah, even at an early age that were like, yeah, hey, I just want access to power. Mm. Or hey, I just want to be famous, or hey, I just want to move up this. That just didn't register to me at that age because I was just naive.
Right.
I think. But
so you were doing your political career, you were and taking out college kids drinking, so you were drinking for work, pretty much.
Yep. And the bar
and there was
scene
no stop button.
No. And the bar scene in D.C. is...
And are you blacking out and working kind of at the same time? Is that how
working.
It looked?
Working.
So what does it look like?
Oh, gosh. Every night. So I was living in that same sort of scenario, though. I had three other guys that were younger. You know, I worked with them. That we all lived in the house together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the bar every night.
And this is in D.C.?
This is in D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, this is in D.C. And so I had a particular bar. There was a couple in the Crystal City Sports Pub. I was like, great establishment.
I'm sure.
But they had dinner every night. I didn't cook. I'm 23. I'm a frat boy. I never learned to cook. So I'm like, I'm just going to have dinner afterward with the guys. We're going to have a drink.
Yeah.
They'd all go home.
You're like me.
Yep, I'd stay
last
there.
Of the Mohicans, yep. Just staying out.
Every time.
Yep.
Every night. And I always said I wasn't doing it. But here I am, stumbling home, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, every night.
Mm-hmm.
Waking up, trying to stumble into work again, and just repeating the same cycle, right? And just getting by.
Yeah.
Literally just getting by. Totally miserable. Just waiting on the other shoe to drop. Because in somewhere in my head, but at night... After work, I thought I was a hotshot.
Right.
Right? We're talking. We're networking. I mean, oh, you work for who? You work for who? Never followed up with any of those people.
I know. Isn't right? that so? Me too. And I think about sometimes, like, not anymore, but in early sobriety, I remember the first year I was like, you know, I was 34 when I first got sober. And my friends were either moms. Right. And had a happy family and successful marriages or so they seem, yep. you know, yep. A lot of them are divorced or, you know, some of them are still together, which is amazing. But I never followed that path. I never really wanted kids. I never wanted that. I want to be a successful woman. I'm successful. I don't need a man. All of that attitude. And then at 34, I'm realizing like, I just want to be taken care of. I just want to, you know, have a good job. I could have gotten way further in life if I just contacted those contacts, did those things, right? But instead, I'm like busy partying.
Yeah.
You know, busy partying. I'm never going to follow through with that card right. that you gave me,
mm-hmm.
that opportunity that you offered me. I never would follow through.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad when you think about it, that there's so many lost opportunities when we drink and we don't value ourselves, I think.
Well, and it's full of it. The guy that I am when there's 6, 7, 8, 9 drinks, right? God knows what I'm saying. Right?
Yeah.
God knows what we're talking about. And God knows who I'm actually talking to.
Yeah.
You know, that number on the card, he could be full of, you know, everything else
I had
too.
A card.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I was handing my card out left and right. What yeah. I could actually do for anybody, who knows, right?
Right.
But you said something there about what you wanted, right? And so I was the opposite. All I ever really wanted was a family, kids.
Yeah.
Picket fence.
Oh,
and
God,
just
yeah.
like stability, right? I've never been married and I have no kids. right? Like, it just seemed to elude me.
Well, it's not too late for you to have kids. You're a guy.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. But it is more been like, why is it always elude? Because all my friends have married and have kids. Some of them, like I said, divorced, not so happy, whatever, right? But it's just always eluded me. And it's because of that split, though, right? It's like, well, what am I doing? Well,
right.
I'm hanging out in the wrong place. I'm hanging out at the bar all the time. I'm hanging out here, right? And then, like everything, nothing's ever good enough for me, right? Like, I have, admittedly hurt some really, really good women's hearts, right?
Yeah.
Who, that's exactly what they want. I have a, I think she's happily married now, but there was this woman that was a friend of a friend. And she just knew it, second date. She's like, yep, it's you. By the way, I'm getting married by the time I'm 34. So I need to have
2.5 kids.
Yep, yep, this is the plan. And I was like, whoa. And she's like, no.
That scared you.
Yeah, she's like, I've been around enough. I know what I want. Don't waste my time.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
I wish I was saying that,
because
even though I thought I didn't want that, I think I did.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm happy with where I'm at now, so it's all good.
Yep.
But, when I was first getting sober, those lost opportunities, you think, wow, and your mind goes there. And then as you get more sober, I think you're like, wait, no, this is where I'm supposed to be. And this is how it's supposed to happen. And, you accept the process.
Yep. And I was in no position ready for it. But I remember that was the first time I'd heard that. And I was just like, I'm bailing. Like, there's no way. Like, this is,
I'm running,
this is a lot of pressure, right?
Yeah.
When in every other aspect of my life,
Under
pressure is the only way I operate.
Right.
Right. But when it comes to someone else, depending upon me in a personal situation, it's like, whoa, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So, but in hindsight, would have never been ready. But and she gave me the second shot later and said the same thing. Okay, this is your second shot. But by the way, we're like 6 months later now.
Mm-hmm.
So that timeline's still there. I mean, I got to laugh about it now. And she's very happily married now and everything else. Very happy for her, but I say that to say, it's like these things that I say I want.
Yeah.
And then
go the other way.
And then I go the other way, right? I run away from it, run from commitment. And that's all that alcoholic, sort of thought, right? Of nothing ever being good enough, always wanting more.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be better if.
Yeah, right.
I get it.
Uh-huh.
I get it. I have to catch myself sometimes and I'm like, no, like enjoy what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Be
grateful for this life is great, right? I find myself doing it down here, right? I think we're allowed to say where we're at, right? We're in South Florida, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're in South Florida.
We're in South Florida, north of Miami,
right.
On the beach.
Like, absolutely,
this is where we live.
We live in the most beautiful area. I mean, the sunset, I love it here. People are always scoff about Florida, and really it's wonderful to live in Delray Beach.
Yeah.
And still, what, you find things to complain about?
Yeah, I have a bad day. I have a bad day, and I'm like, this place, I'm out of here. And I'm like, I don't have anywhere else to go.
It's Del Rey's fault. I'm having a bad day, and it is Del Rey's fault.
Right. So I'm a South runner, right? Because I started there. I told you I'm like from 300 miles from Canada, and I actually used to live on the Canadian border when we were stationing. So I'm like, when I do my change people, places, and things and run, it's just like to a little better climate.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And just a little, I'll run south. I ran to D.C. It's a little better climate in Indiana.
Right.
Move south in Indiana. Like, I'm always looking for better weather, right?
I did the tour of the world, like Europe and South America and back to Europe. You
did the cold. You need to chase the culture.
Yeah, I chase culture.
I'm kind of a climate chaser.
I thought that, New York is my problem. Irene's not the problem. New York's the problem. If I live in, London or Greece or I lived in Peru, London's really expensive. I could not afford London. I was like, I'm out of here real fast. I was living in a box. It was bad. But so anyway, let's stay focused here.
Okay, what are we
tell me more about, what's going on. We're still in D.C.
Oh, yeah. So we're in D.C. And my high school sweetheart, we got together when at the end of college, right?
Okay.
I'd always had this crush on her. Anyway, we went fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it for 3 years. I moved out to D.C. She was in an industry that you kind of moved around cities. And so we finally got her set up with a job in D.C.
Okay.
And she got it. And it's like, oh my God, we're finally, the white picket fence.
Yeah.
Like, it's happening, right? Like, it's finally happening. And she shows up. It was early, you know, and it was like 6 months ahead of my schedule, right?
Yeah.
Because I was playing all right by the time, you know, we still got like a year till she's going to make it, year and a half, so I can screw around, you know, like I'm in no hurry. Well, she, good for her. She got the job a lot earlier.
Right.
Now she shows up. I'm living in a house with three dudes, drinking every night, smoking weed every night. Like, I'm a mess.
Right.
Right.
And she's like, what?
I moved across the country for this, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I had no idea, you know, because I'm just like, ah, it's just destiny.
Just she come on in.
This is fine. Like, I did all the work. We've been together for 3 years doing this long distance, right? Like, you. So it didn't work out, you know. It didn't work out. She made some really different choices real fast without my knowledge. And then that, and when that kind of came out, it was all that stuff with me came out bad. I went.
What happened?
Straight down. I went to the psych ward.
So wait, but what happened? Because you know, you're saying that she made other choices. That means she left you.
Yeah, she left.
Okay, she left you, and then you got upset.
I got very upset. Yeah, very upset. All the negotiating, the bargaining, and this can't be happening.
Right.
And she had made a different choice, and we're, you know, to her credit.
And it made you say some things you regret.
Oh, well, yeah, eventually. Yeah, after I got out of the hospital, after I got suicide.
Why'd you go into the hospital?
I had a very serious suicide attempt at 23 years old. And this is the same thing we're talking about, right? Here I am in D.C. I'm on my third directorship before the age of 25.
Yeah.
I've just gotten into law school.
Oh, my God.
I have this beautiful apartment now because I changed all the things, right? As soon as there was a sign of trouble, it was like, oh, watch me change my life overnight and be amazing, right?
Oh, my God. This is so funny that you say that because I've seen that happen multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, no. Hold on. Watch me do this. And so I somehow luck into this
one. A lot of girls fall for it, too.
She was smarter than that.
Yeah.
Okay. I luck into this 1-1. And I, to my credit, I was trying to be this person, right?
Yeah.
But don't change overnight. And I'm like overlooking the, I wake up every morning and look at the Washington Monument. Like I grew up across from the trailer park, right? And here I am at 24, 23, 24. Like this is actually my life.
This is incredible.
Yeah. But I couldn't have been more miserable. There was one thing and one thing only that I cared about was my ego just got destroyed. My little plans and designs no longer were in play.
Right.
And so all that didn't matter. And I was just heavier on that bottle than I'd ever been. Just looking for any form of escape. And then trying to get my ego back, you know? I'd been humiliated. Well, if you're going to humiliate me, you know, I'm going to humiliate you. You know, like, it's terrible, right? It's a very childish 5-year-old mindset.
But you were hurt. Hurt people.
Exactly. And that's something I've, you know, as I get older and older and realize, holy cow, I look back at my own behavior and go, man.
That wasn't it.
Yeah. Like, what an asshole. Can I say that?
Yeah. Oh, God. That's like the least of it, you know?
Yeah.
People have said way worse. Mm-hmm.
So my mouth, so eventually it got bad enough where I was, you know, basically, I was threatening to ruin her career, basically, just because of the personal information. Really bad.
Yeah.
So she called the police, just kind of come check on me and be like, hey. And they offered me help. It was clear I had a drinking problem. It was clear I had mental health issues.
Right.
It was clear that I was not getting the help I needed. Like, it was abundantly clear.
Right.
And rather than say, yeah, you know what, that's probably a good idea. It was, nah, now I'm going to do it my way. She's wrong. I'm right.
Yeah. You fought it even
Let's
harder.
Let's fight. Yep. Doubling down has just been the story of, you know, it's the story of my life. And it's, I work with other alcoholics down here and I talk to other people. This doubling down.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. I think I did it too.
Never waving the white flag, never surrendering, never just being like,
because when you're right, you are right.
Yeah.
It's hard to concede, you know? It's funny because even in sobriety, I remember I didn't get along with this coworker of mine. And like, he was wrong a lot of the time, but then I would raise my voice or I would do something. And so it was always me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even though I could have been right, I could have been the high, it could have been different.
Right.
But I'm the one getting in trouble because of the way I react.
Yeah.
Right. So it's that reaction that I have to work on because that's the only thing I can control.
Yeah.
And I can't control him. I wanted to.
Oh, I always, yeah. That,
and
I
it's like a similar
to.
Thing, like it's your reaction. Your reaction's going to kill you.
The second guy, I'm a sports guy, right? And they always said the second guy always gets the flag.
Yeah.
Which is always true. You know, they see him out there scuffing around and roughing around. It's never the guy that takes the first cheap shot. It's the guy that turns around and reacts to the cheap shot and everyone sees it.
Yep.
And he gets in trouble.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that was my story, is really at that point, I was a threat to myself. I'd come out of the hospital, a suicide attempt. I mean, I was just, you know, I was devastated, a mess. And, but my mouth, like I said, my mouth has got me everything I've wanted in my life. It's also lost me a lot in my life, right?
Yeah.
It's probably just as bad as the drink for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I turned a misdemeanor there into a couple of federal felonies.
That's crazy.
Because of, well, of course, because I think I'm the exception, right? But they throw you into jail and they say, you know, this phone call is being recorded. I'm like, yeah, but not mine, right? Like, they don't care about me. Hey, do you know they're all recorded?
Oh, I'm sure they're all recorded. when it says it's being recorded, it's being recorded.
I know, right? But that's honest. I'm like, you know what? But I'm a good guy.
Right.
Like, I always saw myself as the exception, right?
Right.
Like, I saw myself as like, yeah, I shouldn't be here.
So you talked yourself into a federal felony.
I talked myself into two federal felonies.
Wow,
not out
that,
of,
that
into.
That mouth of yours got you in a lot of trouble.
Most people talk about how they talk themselves out of trouble.
Yeah, you talked yourself into
trouble. I always talk myself into trouble.
So it wasn't like you weren't physically abusive. You didn't do any drug dealing. Like, you weren't any of those things that we hear about a lot in addiction.
Nope.
Like, hey, I was a drug dealer and I went into jail. And you talked your way into a federal. I just can't believe that still, but you did. So
tell me...
So you did prison time.
Prison time. I ended up all said and done. I ended up in there for 3.5 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And was it like one of those nice prisons?
No.
Or was it one of those where like Oz on HBO?
So I ended up in Springfield, Missouri. So Springfield, Missouri is the second oldest prison in the US.
Okay.
No air conditioning.
Oh, God.
Right, in the Ozarks. So when you say Oz, like, it literally is in the Ozarks.
That's so funny. It's a great show, though.
It is a great show.
Yeah, both Oz and Ozarks.
And terrified. Absolutely terrified, right? I mean, I'm a, you know, fancy myself, you know, like, oh, I can take it.
You're like just about to go to law school, but instead you're going to federal prison.
Yeah, like, I'm a wannabe preppy kid.
Yeah.
You know, from
you're pretty preppy.
Indiana. Today, still, yeah. Someone called me bougie back home, and I'm like, do you know where I'm from? I grew up across from the trailer park.
That doesn't matter. That's old you. That's not who you are today. You're bougie.
Well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Look at those fancy teeth. You got the smile. You got the shirt. You got it all.
You know the teeth are new, right?
They're
new.
Isn't that the best thing about recovery?
They were my... That's the best thing about recovery.
I know, the new teeth. And the, like... You can bite down properly, the whole nine.
Can I talk about the teeth? Because there's like so much history on it.
Sure.
The reason I wouldn't put this is how messed up my mind is. The woman where it ended up working out, we're actually talking about
now.
The reason I didn't propose to her.
Yeah.
Was because I was worried that in the wedding photos that would run in our tiny, tiny little hometown paper, that my teeth were so bad. That I couldn't possibly get my teeth fixed in time, or no, I was scared to go to the dentist.
Right.
And so I went and proposed to her because I was scared about the picture.
Oh my God.
That's how dumb this is.
I used to cover my mouth when I would talk to people. You'll stop.
I've stopped now. Uh-huh.
But isn't it wonderful to smile?
It is.
And like, yes, oh my God. We can relate
it
on that.
It was finally, it was 20 years later, you know? It was 20 years later. I just got them done a little while ago.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Well, I was like, wait a minute.
So wait, let's go back to federal prison.
Uh-huh.
Tell me what it was like.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd love to talk about this. I just don't even know where to start. Man, I think the best story I can tell is just kind of what it was like, how naive and how just out of water I was. Because I remember my sentencing saying in front of the judge, It honestly doesn't matter. This is how cocky I am. It doesn't matter how much time you give me. It's all going to be the stigma I have in this rest of my life. Which has been true, right? Because I figured, I'll do the time, right? But I wanted to die. I wanted to die every day I was in there. And I want to wake up. My best time in there was sleeping. Because when I was sleeping, I was somewhere else. I wasn't there. And so my worst part of every day was waking up.
Oh.
Because I woke up and I looked around and I was like, oh, I am
in prison.
And I'm in prison. And it was all about me. So I'm like mad at my family. I'm like screaming at my family because they didn't stand up for me. I'm just mad at everybody.
Is it a toilet in the cell type of situation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
oh, my
yeah,
God. Yeah. I just saw a show where, it, you know, anyway, it doesn't yeah. matter. Oh.
Toilet in the cell. I can say
gangs.
This. Yeah, well, he's dead now. So I'm going to tell the story that, like, the only way I love playing baseball my whole life.
Yeah.
And so they had a yard there. And they got a softball out. And it was the first time I touched a softball or anything, any sort, in like 18 months.
Yeah.
Because I'd been in county, going to trial, doing this whole mess. And so I go out and play softball. And I guess I did okay, right? Because the very next day, this really, really big guy, like a scary, scary dude, right?
Okay.
Has the worst tattoo of Johnny Cash on his arm you've ever seen.
Oh, no, okay.
Right? But he happens to be from my home state, which in prison terms, like in the whole thing, means that he's supposed to... That's where the term homeboy comes from.
Okay, so, oh, got it.
Yeah,
I never knew.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, okay.
And he says, hey, man, Jerry wants to talk to you. And I have no idea what this means. I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, lunch tomorrow, yada, yada, yada. So I go, and it's this older gentleman that I've seen around. He's in a wheelchair. And I sit down. I don't know what the big deal is. And he's like, hey, young man, I just want you to know that I like the way you play ball. Reminds me of being a kid, you know? So I'm going to be here for a while. I'll never forget those lines. He goes, I'm going to be here for a while and I don't have a whole lot to look forward to. But watching you play ball is a good thing. Will you push me around the track? And I'm like, yeah, of course I will.
Yeah.
All right. So we get done with this. I go back that night and my couple of guys that I were friends with there are like, oh my God, why are you talking to Jerry? What did you do? What's going on? That was Jerry Langella.
What?
That was Jerry Langella, who...
I don't know who that is.
The Colombo crime family.
Oh.
Like, and he's gone now.
Right. Well, I'm sure he has family.
Yeah. He, super, super sweet man.
I'm sure.
Like, well, like my interaction with
him... A lot of
him,
crime bosses are actually very sweet. Not was, that I know too many, but I have known a few, and they're nice.
It was the most naive moment of my life, though. Because here
but
I
did he
am.
Want anything else from you?
Nope.
So... Did you ever, like, get beat up real bad? Like, did you ever get...
No.
Okay.
Nope. I got through that whole experience without that. I had that constant fear. I had one incident where one guy wanted what he thought I had money. I didn't.
Right.
I was gambling in there, right?
Yeah.
I was gambling, and so he
you
thought...
You can't drink in jail.
Oh, you can.
Oh, you can.
I didn't, but boy, you can.
Okay.
And that's the absurdity of it, is I went 3.5 years without a single drink, knowing full well what happens when I drink, knowing the emotional mess I become. I burned my life to the ground.
And there you were sober.
And I was sober, and I like had a 3.5 year head start.
Did you miss it? Did you miss alcohol? Did you, you know?
I missed being able to turn down this.
Right. So my other question then is, what did you do instead? Gamble?
Yeah, I gambled.
And?
It wasn't until the last year. I got into fitness in the last year.
Okay.
Yeah, but for 2.5 years, I just sat there in angry, miserable depression. Just rage. I mean, just uncontrollable. I mean, I can't get out of the bunk. I mean, just literally begging for death every day.
So now let's fast forward. You get out of jail.
Get out.
Yep.
Still angry because I didn't get it.
There's no therapy in jail.
Oh, there was. And I just would go to this therapist.
And lie.
And lie. Not really lie. I would just talk about how all I would basically say is I got screwed.
Yeah.
I was unwilling to take accountability.
It was you who got screwed.
Yep. I was so unwilling to take accountability for my side of the street.
Right.
I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it because if I get in my head, I'm such an all or nothing thinker. That if I give in, that, you know what, I could have handled that a heck of a lot better, and I could have made all these different decisions at this point, and this point. And so I play a role in this. I'm now responsible for everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just how my mind works.
Did you not realize to take responsibility for your stuff till you got sober, right?
Right.
Till you did that. Fourth step.
I spent another 10 years after I got out.
Drinking
and just angry
And causing havoc.
Causing havoc. I would say not as bad.
So you didn't get in trouble again, though.
I got a parking ticket. I've not even got a speeding ticket.
I got way worse than parking. I got a lot of parking tickets.
I had one run-in with the law. It got me 3.5 years, and I haven't, God willing, I haven't had another one since. So
yeah, good.
But it entirely changed the course of my career and my life and the trajectory, because when I got out of there, I had $172 in my pocket.
Wow.
$172 in my pocket. I had hair down to here, and I took a Greyhound. I was so angry at everyone, I wouldn't even let them pick me up from prison.
Oh, wow.
I took a Greyhound bus from Springfield, Missouri to Indianapolis, Indiana.
Is that a long drive?
That's a long hike. It's a whole overnight thing, right?
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't believe that, I was the guy now terrifying people, right? Not on purpose, but I remember I sat next to this kid on the bus. And he's like, I'm like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, what are you on the bus for? I'm like, oh, I'm going home. He's like, oh, yeah, me too. My girlfriend's pregnant. And he's like, what are you here for? I'm like, oh, I just got out of prison. I remember this guy just being like, right?
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, well, no, I'm a nice guy, dude. I went to college.
You understand, I was about to go to law school, but instead I went to prison.
Right. Yeah, I tried to be my own lawyer. It didn't work out.
Yeah. Never defend yourself.
Oh, I didn't defend myself. My own lawyer. I was trying to tell my lawyer what to do, and he's like, no. It didn't work out.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, yeah, but it changed that trajectory. I went back to Indiana to tell him between my legs. Didn't know where to go. Luckily, I mean, my family, my family's been supportive, right? My family, we got issues, but they've been to the best of their ability, And
so what does your drinking look like now? Are you working? Are you?
Oh, yeah. So I've gotten to construction, right? Okay. I tried to make as a personal trainer for a while because I did the thing that everyone does in prison. I got in the best shape of my life.
Right.
Became a certified trainer.
In prison?
Yeah.
You could do that?
We were the first ones to do it.
Oh, wow.
We did. It was kind of cool.
Okay.
Took the test. It was cool.
That's cool.
I mean, it was the most productive use of that time.
I guess,
that I could have.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I did that, but it was, I'm in the middle of northern Indiana trying to be a trainer. Not a great market.
Right.
So I had a lifelong friend. He's still like a brother to me this day. Still a brother. I was just with his family over the weekend. He got me a job in construction as a laborer.
Okay.
And I still couldn't take the humility lesson. Right. Here I was with my double major from a liberal arts. Mm-hmm. And he would tell me every day, bud, hey, I hired you from here down. Get back in the ditch with that shovel. It was a great job. It was a union job. It gave me what I needed. But the resentment was still there.
Of course.
Oh, I got to work in construction. And, I'm supposed to be a lawyer. And if only this hadn't happened. And so I was drinking every night.
Yeah.
Drinking every night and doing anything to get out of my head.
Super miserable.
Super miserable. Don't have the family. Don't have the kids. So now I'm going to go out to the bar. I'm going to party with people, 5 years younger than me, 10 years younger than me.
Because no brush-ins with the law at this point. But any other consequences besides the fact that you're miserable? Which is a pretty
terrible. I somehow was able to evade it because I went ahead and somehow bought a house.
Okay.
Right in the middle of the bar district of Indianapolis.
Oh,
so God. I didn't have to drive much.
Yeah.
It's funny you asked me to do this tonight. There's a big consequence. 2 years ago tomorrow, tomorrow's a 2 year anniversary of my ex-girlfriend's death.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And this is the ex-girlfriend that you...
No, this was the... God dropped this in my life again while I was drinking.
After prison.
All this stuff. Girl. I burned my life down multiple times. And then I got a wonderful woman in my life.
Okay.
In Indianapolis. Wonderful woman. And we met at the bar. That's the truth. We met at the bar and she was a heavy drinker as well. But didn't have the alcoholic thinking.
Yeah.
Right. Just enjoyed the drink.
Yeah.
The mind and go. So I burned that relationship down. I burned it down. I mean, broke her heart. Because same thing.
No commitment.
Merit. You know it.
Right.
Yep. I wanted it. She knew
what. You secretly wanted it, but yet when it was right in front of you, you were like,
the shame. I remember it was Thanksgiving of 2019. And so she'd moved into my house. That I was going to renovate and do this and make all this money out of it and flip it.
I had those same dreams.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I have her living in this house with no kitchen. And she was like, oh, I'm going to have my family over. And I just freaked out in my head. Didn't go off on her. I just shut down, though. Well, I'm not going to Thanksgiving because it was all about my ego.
Right.
It was all about, oh, my God.
How can they see this?
How can they see that I have their daughter living in a house with no kitchen in it? Because I drink all the time. They're going to think the worst of me, and they're always going to make fun of me, and I'm never going to be accepted. Just no one said that. Right. I said that to myself.
Yeah.
And I end up literally fleeing the country on her.
Where'd you go?
I was in Southeast Asia, just bolting.
Where in Southeast Asia?
So I was in Thailand.
Okay.
There's quite the party scene over there.
I have heard.
It is not a great place to get sober. It's not a great place to get
sober. Well, you weren't trying to get sober, were you?
No, I was trying to find myself.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't. I found a lot of trouble.
Okay.
A lot of trouble. But of course, the alcoholic me, I'm like...
You didn't go to jail in Southeast Asia, right?
No, because I wouldn't have come back.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things. And I went and I was like, well, this is the life.
Yeah.
There's no consequences.
My cousin lived out there, too.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And she lives in now west coast of Florida. She's like... Gotta come home to the freedom, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta come home to the freedom.
Why do you think everyone in the world wants to come here?
Exactly. That's where they're, oh, you're from America. Oh, you're from America. And I'm like, it's not that great.
Yeah.
And they're like, basically like, well, cool. I mean, you can stay here if I can take your spot, right?
Right, totally.
So, but yeah, I burnt that relationship down, came back. She was, you know, we split up. And yeah, and so we tried to work on it. We stayed close, but it was... It was painful. We tried to work it out. I wasn't doing a great job with my 8th and 9th step. Mm. I had no introduction, kept drinking. I said I was getting sober. I wasn't getting sober.
You weren't going to meetings or anything,
nope.
Were you?
No.
Okay. You were just saying you were going to stop drinking.
Oh, I did it. I white-knuckled it. I got in the best shape of my life again.
Oh.
I went on all these bike rides, and I was just shove it in her face, you know, that... Well, hey, yeah, the reason we didn't work out is because you drink all the time, right?
Oh.
Right, because now I'm not drinking.
How long did that last?
Oh, as far as this, oh, did I say sober? Sober?
Yeah.
Well, I say 7 months, but that's not true.
Okay.
Because one, I was getting high every night.
Oh, you were smoking weed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was the main
that program. Doesn't count, right?
Yeah, it doesn't count. Yeah, if I'm not drinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and I would pat myself on the back, all sorts of social media posts, like, hey, I'm 6 months sober without a drink.
No.
Oh, yeah, I'm high every night. No, by the way, I've actually, I would take like little vacations once a month.
It's called something these days. I think it's called like Cali Sober.
It is. Yeah, yeah. California Sober.
Hey, good for whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can't do it, but if someone else can, more power to you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
More power to you. So what happened? When did things change for you? Let's get into
Well, this is where we're going. I came back. I ended up back over because I'm like going to flee the country. I vacation. For the third time in Thailand, I came back. She's not talking to me. Mm. She's like, all right, I've had enough of you. Like, mm-hmm. We're going to, and now you just, because you always just go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You just go do whatever you want, whatever, you know, you just got this impulsive. You don't think about anyone else to yourself. And anyway, I came back and then had a work thing in Vegas. And my buddy comes over and says, hey, we got to talk. And it's about her. And I was like, all right. Well, she's sick. And I assumed it was COVID. And I said, it's stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
Oh, that's so bad. That's a really bad one.
So, yeah, it was really bad. So she...
That's like the worst one.
She passed. That was in February of 22. Mm. And she passed May 28th. And today's May 27th.
I'm so sorry. So,
no, it's... she lived an amazing life. And she was surrounded by friends. And I, you know, that's something I have to carry with me the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I have to carry it with me the rest of my life. And that's okay. Because it is something that I definitely screwed up. You know, it is a situation, a relationship.
But it wasn't meant to be, right?
Right. But I was back with some of her friends this weekend. But that is what brought me here.
Okay.
She went and there was no way for me to handle it. I tried to run. I tried to drink. I tried to go on. I tried to take a trip.
Right.
Like literally everything they talk about in the big book.
Yeah. Take a trip. Not take,
take a trip. Don't take a trip.
Only drink on weeknights.
I
only
did
drink on weekends.
Every single one of them. Right.
That's like one of my favorite paragraphs in the Big Book. It's like that don't take a drink. You know, it's such a good one.
Every single one of them when I read that. Yeah. Every time I'm like, I've done all these.
Right.
Almost. And eventually, thank God, there were a couple of strong women in my life that happened to be therapists.
Yeah.
That were like, hey, bud, either I sold my house. I mean, I sold my house. I got everything to cash. Honestly, the best thing I thought I could do was to give the money to her family and take myself out. Like, that's where I was in my head. And it was some people who was like, well, pretty much that would be exactly who you actually are. Like, that you're that weak. That is the way that you're going to deal with this, right? Because one, you don't have that much money. you don't actually really have any money, right? Like, you're going to sell a little house and this. So you're not doing anything. And you're actually still making this all about you.
Right.
You're making this all about you, Kyle. And I came down here. I came down to treatment, rehab, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Was
it a 12-step based treatment or was it?
No,
yeah.
It was, for me, it was PTSD, trauma, grief. That's what I said I was coming down here for, depression. It wasn't until I stopped drinking that I realized how much the drinking and the getting high really was dominating my life.
Yeah.
I had
no idea.
Causes
the depression. And, you know, we think we're drinking to help that, but really it's causing it.
So I had I was like adamant when I came down here.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not down here for drugs and alcohol. And everyone's like, wait a minute. Like, look, literally we have 20 years right here.
Oh, you were.
Like, I have 20 years here of you. This is all drinking and drug related.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, but that's not my real problem. Like, like she's my problem. Prison's the problem. My family's the problem. This is the problem.
They're like, no, Kyle, you are the problem.
I am the problem.
Right. What's the common denominator?
That's exactly right.
That's my favorite thing that they told me. They're like, and the common denominator, because I understand math, right? Math and logical thinking and like that stuff. Yes. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Me.
I'm delusional enough, though, that I was like, I'm just this. I'm literally the victim of conspiratorial circumstance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just out to get me. It's so nuts. It's so insane, right? But yeah, the problem's me.
So did you then decide, like, how did it begin?
I came here and I was going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this isn't for me. And I just needed a break. And I remember I was about 2 months into this thing where I'm down here, I've left my a really good job, a great job in Indy, a great job in Indianapolis. Company was, I mean, I had just been there. I had just got there a year before.
I hear there's a good commerce. I mean, it's a bigger city.
I was doing fine, but it was in construction.
Uh-huh.
I was doing some senior management stuff. Great organization, great people. And I let there being great about the fact that, you know, I just lost someone close. And,
right.
And here I am 2 months. I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do it. My best thinking, I was going to walk out of that rehab, get on a plane, go back to Southeast Asia, and just live out my days.
And when was this? When did you go to treatment? What year
July
was this?
22. So okay. I made it about 5 weeks after Martha passed.
So you're almost 2 years sober.
It's coming up next month.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I guess in a month and a half, yeah.
Oh my God, it just gets
so much better.
It's all so good, but it gets like better, and then there's struggles, and then it gets better, and then struggles, and but the better each time is like higher and higher, right? So it's like,
That's been year two, right? Like year one was just like once I made that decision, like, you know what, Kyle, you're the problem. This has been in front of you the whole time.
Yeah.
Like the concept of the 12 steps. The concept of finding a God, the concept of finding some sort of faith has been in my face, and I've been so reluctant to it my entire life.
Mm.
And once I just kind of made that willingness, it was like, oh, pink cloud. I mean, I just like, my life was like, oh my God, I'm in South Florida. I live at the beach all the time. My life's amazing.
Yeah.
And then year two happened, right? But what you just said, right? It's like going through life.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, wait a minute, I don't have to burn everything else down because something didn't go my way?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I can use these tools? At 40 years old, it's like being a child. It's like I've never, and it builds that confidence.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, oh my God, I can actually deal with life now.
And it's so cool. So what did early sobriety look like to you? How did you do it?
So I was lucky enough because, again, I sold everything.
You accepted that you are the problem.
I'm 100% the problem.
And now you have some self-awareness, which is like the key, right?
Yeah.
And the willingness.
I was armed with facts about myself.
Yeah.
That when I pick up a drink, it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And that was one thing. And then the second thing was, why do I pick up a drink?
Right.
Oh, I've got this whole list of things I'm angry about, resentful about, mad about, or it's all about me, or I'm not getting enough. And I got a sponsor. I got strong men around me. I have really, really strong men around me.
Yeah.
I have a heck of a crew of guys. A lot of them that have been doing this a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I start spitting out all my garbage and my terminal uniqueness. And
they're like, yeah, okay, bye.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I guess, you know, I've been in prison. Yeah, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? What? And I did it's more so, time than you.
Yeah, I hear it's so funny because I remember when girls do their fourth step with me and I tell you to them, like, you can tell me anything, really. I've heard it all. I mean, I've heard it all. There was a guy in my group therapy that was in the, he was like in a gang, like he was in a cartel, like somehow yeah. related to the cartel. And he like, he basically like, took apart human bodies for the cartel. Yeah. And I was like, after hearing that, yeah. I can hear just about any, but they forced him at gunpoint. Like, you know, like there's just, yeah. you know, and at that point there was just so much PTSD that who knows, but it's so crazy to me that we all think we're terminally unique and like that nobody understands us.
Well, and isn't this the beauty? I found now this is, I mean, this is my biggest joy in life now. I go to prisons now.
And talk?
Because it was that big thing that I just didn't ever want to talk about. I didn't ever want anyone to know. I'm just going to, if I can just get by enough without it.
Right.
Now it's my biggest asset. I lead with it. Because I do, I get the opportunity to go into these places and say, guys, hope's not lost.
Right.
Like, I remember sitting exactly where you were. And I also remember them bringing AA meetings and 12-step meetings into the prison and me wanting nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But I am so inspired. Honestly, it's the best meeting I ever go to is these meetings.
I actually was telling a friend of mine, like, I'd love to talk at a prison. You know, I'd love to go into a women's prison and talk and stuff like that.
Well, it's not me. It's not me spreading the message. I'll tell you, I go to a couple of them where there's a bunch of lifers.
Yeah.
You want to talk about inspiring? As someone who is never getting out. Wow. Never getting out. There is no material gain by working a program except to improve
yourself,
their self, to find purpose in life. And what is their purpose in life? Their purpose in life is helping other people in there in the same situation.
Right.
And they are the most free people I've ever seen. I walk out of the air and go, holy cow, this is powerful.
That's so cool.
That's super powerful. It's the favorite thing. It's the thing I'm
most probably no longer miserable either.
No, they're great people. I mean, the guy comes up to me and I'm like, hey, man, this guy's really, he must be going home soon. You know, he's never going home. He's been there for 30 years.
Wow. He will and his be purpose is just to help other alcoholics and addicts in prison.
That's what he does.
And that's what he does.
And they talk, and I love that they talk about, because you asked earlier, you can't drink in prison. It's fascinating to me when I go to these places, not that of the resources, because I remember it. I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
But watching guys struggle with addiction in prison. Meaning to me, it really isn't the circumstances.
Yeah.
It didn't matter where I was.
Right. You can find it anywhere.
Didn't matter if I was on Capitol Hill.
Right.
Right? It didn't matter if I was across from my house. It didn't matter if I was in the cornfields of Indiana. It didn't matter if I was in the woods. It didn't matter if I was in Thailand, the U.S. It didn't matter where I was. Wherever I go, there I am.
Right. Oh, my God. It's like the theme of every alcoholic. You know, we try to escape in every form, and then there we are.
Yeah. And it's and so I love that because it's not, you know, it's not me. It's these guys. It's these guys that inspire me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm reminded every day and wherever I'm working with people, or people are working with me, I'm reminded of my, and it casts a light on how crazy I am. My own delusional thinking, when I see it, I'm like, man, that's some crazy thinking.
Yeah.
Except that's exactly how I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So if you can, you can tell people today, like, what, give some advice in terms of, you know, what you do and what helps you, what would it be?
Just go with it. It's been the biggest thing I've had, right?
Yeah.
The biggest thing is believing that if I get out of the way, like, everything's for a reason. Every time that things have not gone, have turned out really bad, it has been when I have tried to interfere with the way things were just going, that
right,
were out of my control.
I know.
Every time I've gone with it, it has led me to some sort of, not necessarily material. Most time it's not material.
Yeah.
It has to do with either some spiritual sort of awakening, some sort of inner peace, some reunion with somebody, some, you know, family being rebuilt. Just go with it and listen to experience.
Yeah.
Because those experiences are being shared with you. Your own experiences then become your own best assets. All of that stuff that was in me that I carried, that I would never talk about. I'd never talk about being in prison. Never talk about being a felon. I'd never talk about the trauma of it.
It helps people.
I don't just talk about the stuff now. It's not in a sad way. Oh, woe is me. It's like, I am so glad,
right,
that these worst experiences I thought that I would never get over,
yeah,
have now been, like, I feel so free.
Well, humility is saying, like, I worked through that, you know? I worked hard to get through that. That is humility, you know? Yeah. Humility is saying, you know, okay, you're not boasting, but you're saying, like, hey, like, it wasn't easy. You have to work for it, but it's worth it.
And it's your best asset.
Yeah.
All of that stuff that I thought I wanted to die over.
Yeah.
Or is now stuff that I feel like, you know what? Rather than die over it, maybe I can save someone else's life with it.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
like,
incredible.
And I think it gives us
purpose.
Well, I think that anyone, like, anytime it's bad, it's Viktor Frankl, right? Man's search for meaning in life.
Yeah.
Right? It's all the spirit, right? And that your experience can be, you know, you just never know, right? You never know. And every time I go with it, right? Every time I go with it and I pray and I find some faith and I'm like, all right, what's this about?
Right.
And it's like, it's never.
Why are you doing this to me? But it's not to you. It's for you.
Yeah. I still get my, what I call my Nancy Kerrigans. Right. I'm just like, why? Why? Really? But in short time, it's always revealed. And it almost always has to do with either one, save me from a situation that I really was like, whoa.
Right.
Like, you know, just like drugs and drinks, like I'll get into toxic things, right, that want to kill me.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, but that tastes so good, but it felt so good, but oh, that was gonna kill you.
It's not worth
just it. Like the drink.
Yeah, I always try to remember the worst moments and remember really the end, because in the beginning it was so fun, but in the end I was like hanging out in the bathroom. So that's what it really looks like, right?
Yeah.
In the end of the day, like, it's our alcoholism still progresses even when we're not drinking, you know. It's just like we just will pick up right where we left off.
Right,
like, it doesn't, it's not like now Irene can drink one glass of wine. Like, that's not how it works, you know? But, so I ask everyone this, is there, first of all, is there anything that you feel like you haven't shared that you want to share?
No, I just kind of float. I don't really know what we said here.
I know, right?
Talk,
is that the
you're
best?
Right. You're like, just talk for an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. God flows so,
I don't
through
know
you.
How much talked about sobriety, but.
No, it's good. And you know, I think it's important to hear what you went through so that people, because really, I think, I don't know who's watching, but anyone can watch, right? It's on YouTube. Anyone in the world can watch this and maybe it will help them. And that's the point. And to hear how bad it was for you, I think is so important, because look how good it is for you.
That's what you said. Know? Yeah, at the end, like, I thought it had rock bottom, right? And then the trap door came out.
Right.
My end was.
Well, you know, you can dig. You can keep digging.
Oh yeah, I dug. Yeah, I dug myself the trap door. But that was the end for me. The end for me was somehow at 39 years old, after being through all this, you know, thinking I'd overcome all this stuff, bought a house, had the cars, had the job. I'm in an empty house. My poor mother's in there to try to help. She's boxing up my things, and I'm just laying in an empty house. You know, literally kind of banging my head on the ground. Like, I just can't believe that
I know
I've done it again. You know, right. I'll never get over this. But the idea is that, like, it's never too late.
No, it's never,
too late. Like, today could be the day. Today could be the day. Today could be the day. Just start over. And it's worked.
Well, I tell people also, like, you're having a bad day. reset, start over. Like, it doesn't have to be tomorrow will be better. Like, this afternoon, like right now, let's reset. And I'll go out. Sometimes I have to like sit in my car for 10 minutes and meditate or do whatever I have to do, breathe through it. And then I go back in and I'm like, I'm starting over. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm just starting over. Like, what do I do in the morning? Have a cup of coffee. I'm starting over. Yeah. I'm having another new cup of coffee. Like, bring everything fresh, you know? So if you could go back and tell your younger self something, give your younger self a piece of advice, what age would you be? Like, what do you picture in your mind when you're having this conversation with your younger self?
I love this question.
And what would you say?
I'd go back to that. I would go back to because I've answered this question before.
Yeah.
Right. And so when I used to answer this question, it used to be like, I'd go back and be like, hey man, these things will come up. Avoid this person. Don't do this. Don't do this. It's going to turn out really bad. If you would have gone back and told, and I answer this question now this way. If you would have gone back and told that scared 14-year-old kid, hey bud, I got a proposition for you. You're going to be 41 years old. You're going to live in the Miami area.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to have a job that you really like.
Yeah.
You're going to spend your time coaching kids baseball, going to prisons. You're going to be real involved in helping younger men.
Yeah.
You're going to feel really free. You're going to have the car you've always wanted.
Right.
I'd be like,
I love your car. You know that.
we have to talk about our exchange. Yeah. Yours better than mine.
Well, I don't know. But anyway,
but if you would have told me all that, right?
Yeah.
Because that was what 14-year-old Kyle like appealed to, right?
Yeah. Something
like, hey, that's going to be your life. Like, I'd be like, sweet. And like, all right, cool. Here's the second part. It's going to be really, really ugly. It's going to feel like you're never going to get there. You're going to screw up along the way. But keep going.
Keep going.
Keep going, because this is where it goes. Because I don't know where it goes after this. It could all blow up tomorrow, right? But then something's going to tell me that 63-year-old Kyle would want to come tell 41-year-old Kyle, hey, bud.
Yeah.
You know when you thought everything got stabilized? And then it didn't?
That's part of the journey.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I would tell 14-year-old Kyle, is that, listen, this life, like, you're going to end up where, you know, you're not going to be denied a life of freedom and peace and whatever. Just go with it, dude.
Go with it.
Just relax.
I love that. I think that's the best advice. Just go with it. I mean, that's all we can do is really, like I say, ride the wave, you know? Well, now it's time to hug.
Oh, we hug here?
Yeah. So we get up and hug.
All right, let's hug.